Here, we had an action-packed weekend. Friday night, we have a sign language class that Ocean gave. And on Saturday, Aisho gave a class, a workshop on racism here. So, and here we are back again on Sunday morning. Pardon? And just sitting on Saturday afternoon. So it's been an action-packed weekend. Ocean is continuing to lead a course in sign language. And I believe we could, those of us who've missed the first couple of ones can tag on Friday nights. So we're sitting here on the 11th floor of this building on Broadway, you know, ancient Broadway, which was, as many of you know, was a Native American footpath that led all the way up to Albany back before the colonialists arrived. So in a way, we could be aware that we are all kind of floating in a sea of time, in a constantly shifting stream of change. Each moment of time succeeds the one before. It's as if we're all carried along on this vast, impermanent flood of Dharma, all the Dharmas, a flood of life and death. So for me, this image of a flowing stream of life teaches me how to meet my life moment to moment. How to experience my life as a life of value and thus to serve. I think of it as a vast flowing river like the Hudson, our magnificent Hudson River. And it brings to mind, for me, one of my favorite passages from the early sutras. Actually, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra in 8,000 Lines, which is the one that precedes the Diamond Sutra. It's a little earlier than that. And drawn from that was drawn the Diamond Sutra. But I love this little piece of it, this little short segment of it where it's at a riverside and there's a bodhisattva who's sitting in a ferry boat piloting people back and forth across the river. And it reads like this: "She courses in dharmas as empty, signless, and wishless, but she does not experience the blessed rest. Nor does she course in a sign. As a skillful ferrywoman goes from this shore to the other shore, but also does not stand at either end, nor does she stand in the great flood." I'll read it again for the other half of the room. "He courses in dharmas as empty, signless, and wishless. But he does not experience the blessed rest, nor does he course in a sign. As a skillful ferryman goes from this shore to the other shore, but also does not stand at either end, nor does he stand in the great flood." You know, I like this so much because, first of all, it does evoke the wisdom and compassion of our practice. But it also is a teaching on how to live a life of service and caring, and also how to meet the inevitable change that life brings up for us. She courses in dharmas as empty, signless, and wishless. It's like the Heart Sutra. This bodhisattva experiences what is arising right now. What is up for us right now? It's not a fixed thing. Courses in dharmas is empty. Whatever it is that's arising right now, it's gone. It has no substance. It's transient. And it's made up of all the other things that are also arising in the moment, and all the other things that are arising in our own heart and mind as a result of our particular history and of our particular experience. It's like this shift, it's like a wave in the Hudson. It's like the cold Atlantic coming in the bottom of the Hudson and the warm water coming from the mountains meeting in the Hudson River. Huh? It's not fixed. Also, signless. It can't be fixed by any particular word or phrase. Success or failure, old or young, good or bad, sick or healthy. Signless. And wishless. To desire what is not here is a joke. To desire what is not here does not help, does not serve. So instead, she navigates this ferry boat from shore to shore, Manhattan to Staten Island, from Staten Island to Manhattan, not stopping and resting at one side or the other, but moving with the flowing stream of time. We can't stop, but we can think we can stop. Or we can think we're stopped, but actually we're always moving with the stream of time. Constantly. And to be present to that, to be, oh, this moment so unique and so different from the previous one, from the previous Sunday that we were here, from the previous 5 minutes ago, right here, or as Dogen says, right on top of our heads, this moment. You could say that this is the ferry boat here. We're in it together. And we're making our way across the sea of life with its suffering and its temptations and its struggles. You could say this is the Sangha boat. And each of us is the pilot. You could say that the boat is you, yourself, and also that you are piloting it. You could say that the boat is Zen, And we are making our way across a sea of change. You could say that the boat is a religion, and that's how we save ourselves. A couple of you are frowning. What? A religion? Isn't that what attracted us to Zen? That it's a way of life, not a religion? I've been thinking about this a lot, and how we think about what we mean by religion. You know, if you look at the origins of the word, there is some disagreement about it, which is very interesting. Does it come from religio, the Latin word that means to bind, or an obligation, a reverence? Or does it come from religere, which means to reread or to go over again, a kind of scrupulousness, a care, an attention to precision or clarity? You see, one is a bonding, a holding. The other is a scrupulous caring. But both of them seem to give off this feeling of reverence, of attention, of obligation. It makes me think of a bodhisattva who supports us. Our bodhisattva inside of us supports us, and our bodhisattva energy supports this group. Think of a boat that's holding you in the shifting waters. Think of your own scrupulous, attentive zazen as holding you. These days, I've become very aware of how my zazen holds me and protects me and gives me a sense of grace. Even now, when I'm feeling kind of fragile. And when I say zazen, I don't just mean what we do on the cushion. But rather what we do with all of us sitting in this boat together as we travel down this stream of time. You know, if we consider when Zen first came to us, came to the West anyway, in the 19th century, you know, that wasn't so long ago. It came just at the same time that modernity was on the rise. And both Romanticism and secularism were making waves in this stream of time. And it was a period of great reaction against conservative, hierarchical, and fundamentalist aspects of religion. At such a time, a new religion would not have been so acceptable. Rather, a more scientific and creative, psychological, and individualistic social entity or movement was called for. And so the Zen that came to us, courtesy of our Asian teachers and the scholars and translators, was a Zen that was shaped, probably unconsciously, by the flood of the tides of Western modernity. It was just the way things were then. It's a character of the times. And these wonderful scholars and poets and philosophers complied with the kinds of translations, presentations that they used to explain in psychological and romantic and scientific terminology the Buddhisms that they encountered. They were not religions. They were something else. So for Thoreau and Emerson, William James, and those to follow, the Buddhism they encountered was very different from the Buddhism that was existent in the East. It was nonconformist, for one thing. And then we all know that by the mid-20th century, Zen was the cool way to go for artists, musicians, writers. It was kind of a self-made practice, like Alan Watts and the Beats. You know, it was that movement that brought me to Zen. It was not a religion. It was a way. There were other ways, of course, that became popular after Zen. And the times, they keep changing. The postmodern era arrives. We become disillusioned with the idealism of romanticism, the certainty of every pronouncement by science, the impotence of secularism to relieve our suffering, to help us make meaning in our life. So we flow along this river of change, romanticism, individualism, nonconformism, postmodernism. And we see the old forms of family and community falling apart. We find that we're more easily able to connect with someone thousands of miles away through the internet than we are to be intimate with our local neighbors. We're inundated with information and the impossibility of true connection. I think many of us feel sometimes lost, as if our lives are being shaped by forces outside of our control. And thus, a thirst for something meaningful arises, something that can support us, that can hold the self as it flows through these streams of change. So I think now we have a kind of sense that there we want something that will hold us, that will bind us, God forbid, help us to look scrupulously at our lives and at what is happening in the whole world. A kind of binding. Holding. You know, there's an old English definition for religion in the 1200 or so, is living under monastic vows. We're not monastic here, but I can't think of a more powerful vow than sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. What do we mean by that? I vow to save them. You know, each of us is included in that sentient beings. And not only us, sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them, but also all the beings that there are. All the experiences that we encounter. The vow is all-inclusive and demands that we free our own thoughts, that we free ourselves so that we can care for all beings, for all existence. Those parts of ourselves that we call the other. And what is it that would support that kind of endeavor? What can help us to do that, to save all beings? It's the power, in my view, of this boat that I'm referring to, of this holding in the Zen boat for this group. We don't expect it to stay in one place. We don't expect it to not change. We don't expect Zen to be one way or one thing. No, we all get in the boat and we try to manage these flowing waters that are swirling around us. We gather physically in the boat on a Sunday morning. We sit together. We chant, we bow, and we essentially live in this boat, crossing the water of change, the water of our lives. It is the power of holding. It is the Dharma of Sangha. You know, I, of all people, have been so resistant to the word religion, to the idea of religion. And yet I found this boat, and it is the holding that I experience in this boat that frees me. Some of you may know that a couple of weeks ago, during my annual physical, my doctor became quite alarmed and sent me right upstairs. I had some heart tests, and thus an odyssey that is not yet over for me. I have been thoroughly checked and had a various tests, and I'm on a bunch of medications that make me a little bit spacey and strange. But the most disconcerting thing is, you know, like this, to see a doctor who's upset and frightened about my life, right? It's, you're talking about me. You're talking about my heart, my life. And it's scary. I mean, it's so scary that, you know, it's really easy to kind of disassociate from the whole thing. Must be talking about her sitting next to me. We all know that we're going to get old and die. But when we're faced with a serious diagnosis, you know, we don't want to take it in. So it's hard to stay present, to listen carefully, to ask questions, you know. I was very fortunate to have Joshin Sensei with me, who was able to serve that function. But as for me, I'm in the boat. And you're with me here in the boat. I gotta say, I'm so thankful for being in a Zen boat going down these rivers. I'm being held by that. I'm being served by that. I'm being saved by that. So we can call it a religion, or we can call it a way. But it heals, and it soothes, and it serves. Of course we move through time, just like that verse that I quoted at the beginning. If we're lucky, we can find ourselves in a boat that will serve us, that reminds us of the fundamental boundlessness. I like that much better than emptiness. Boundlessness of all dharmas, of our very lives. How everything is contingent. Everything is relational. Nothing is fixed. In this boat, we can see that we are fundamentally free and can free ourselves from that clinging suffering that arises out of holding on to something that's not here. It's an idea. All of it is an idea. This is how we save ourselves from suffering. Get in the boat with me. Let me close with the gatha. What holds you? What binds you? It doesn't need a name, nor an idea, nor a desire. Isn't it your own hand on the rudder? Her hand on the paddle? Coursing together through the flood of our lives.